Now, while we've kept him kind of in the background now, we do have a special guest this episode who I'd like to bring to the mic, and that is, I think I'll call him ANN's own, Anime News Network's own, Egan Liu, here to have his podcasting cherry popped.
Egan.
No, that's not happening. Finally get a chance to talk.
Here. Hi there, Egan. How are you going?
Pretty good, yeah. Relaxing here, getting ready for Tokyo Anime Fair, Anime Contest Expo, the two big anime events of the year.
So you've come into town for that. You want to tell people briefly what it is you do?
I basically don't sleep. And you guys can testify to that. There's so much that's happening when it comes to anime news in Japan. And when Japan is sleeping, that's when things kick into gear in the United States and Europe. Things are always happening, be it announcements, be it celebrations. And I try to report on it as soon as I can. And I do sleep, actually. I do remember sleeping sometime today.
A couple of hours at a time. So you basically do what? Most of the news posts, or a fair chunk of the news posts.
Used to be the case. Fortunately, there's been people who's been able to come in. I've got a good team here. We're all going to be over at the two events, TAP and ACE. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's going to be fine.
Okay. Now, I don't think it would be any understatement to say that you're a huge Macross fan with a large, long, and deeply involved history with Macross. You want to start off telling us how you were introduced to Macross?
I think what I remember is the first exposure to it was, fortunately, was Do You Remember Love? Back when people had it on LDs and DVDs, well, not DVDs, videotapes. A friend of mine's had it on LD. That was my first exposure. Unfortunately, it was Super Space Fortress Macross, the English version of it. And I think you guys actually have a copy of it, right, on videotape?
Yes, I do.
I have one back home.
Just don't have a working Laserdisc player.
Yeah, mine's on the fritz, but I do have it. And I have it on VHS.
Because we use it so much.
Yes.
For those Macross 2 Laserdiscs out the back. Hey, what's that next to the...
Macross 2 LD box set.
Well, you can bring it over to my house and watch it at my house. I have one.
All right.
Also a fax machine. That's
and
true.
A radio.
Yeah.
All right, back to Egan, though. So,
you laugh, but post-apocalypse.
I want to do a mini vox pop before we get into the good stuff. So, sure. Personally.
Uh-huh.
Oh, first of all, going back again then. So, you're first exposed to Macross by Do You Remember Love, which is, I think, safe to say, the opposite order to the way most people experience it. How did it feel going back from that to the original TV series with such a drop in animation quality?
I didn't mind it so much, mostly because, well, I saw the English dub of Do You Remember Love. And while the visual shines through, yeah, the story kind of takes a hit because of that.
When was this?
Golly, I remember it during elementary school, but I don't remember the exact year. Mm-hmm. It had to have been, of course, after it was released on LD. But
right.
And then the nice thing about the TV series is as much as the visuals grab us and take us in for the movie, mm-hmm. TV series still has a longer story, the longer character arcs, gets us to appreciate all the journey they go through and love the characters even more.
So personally then, let's get the important stuff out of the way. Favorite series?
No, Misa Mime. Okay, you're not asking that question.
No, we'll get there. Yeah. I'll tackle that one.
Favorite series?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think I'd still go back to the TV series. Even though Do You Remember Love was my first exposure, the TV series, just telling the entire story as in a way it was meant to be told originally, mm-hmm. That's the way I like it.
All right. Favorite Valk?
Ooh. VF1. I would say VF1. I'm looking at the YF19 being played with Richard right now. And it's got a rank up there as well too.
But you want to elaborate on that when you say VF1?
VF1J. Just the right number of antenna, guns on the head. That's all. That's what matters. 4 is a little too much. It gets a little bit spiky at that point.
All right. And favorite singer.
Ooh. Minmay still, I suppose. But then the Macross Frontier. Oh, wait. There's always a Kino Rai. Yeah, it's a four-way tie, I guess.
All right. So that's singing-wise, but... Well. So which female character is the one that's hot and juicy in all the right places for you?
Mosh?
There's no right answer to that question, is there? Oh, take out a couple of those adjectives.
Okay, how about who is the hottest of the girls in Macross?
Richard, why are you pointing out Mao? Oh, if that's your favorite, I'm not going to judge you. I'm still not judging you. Don't worry. I would say Lisa's still up there after all these years. And the Plus and Frontier characters, once again, just like with the singers, they bring out, especially Cheryl. She's a friend of mine and I, we talk about how unbelievably strong of a character Cheryl is, mm-hmm. especially, depending on which version you see,
mm-hmm.
and how she's a role model. Like, she likes Cheryl, because, she's a great character for... No, you don't always get too many strong female characters aside from, certain Miyazaki films and some anime series. Cheryl is one of the stronger ones out there.
Or Pris from Bubblegum Crisis.
There you go. Yeah. There's certain anime titles that gives you strong female characters that you
like Kaon.
Yeah.
Like Kaon.
Personal interest. Big Clan, Little Clan. Which one?
Oh, God.
Big Clan? Yeah, I'll say Big Clan.
Good answer.
All right, so, Egan, I first came across you online many, many years ago. I believe you had a pretty strong online presence when it came to Macross back in the day. Do you want to tell people what that was and what you were doing?
Well, I was in Japan at the time, and Macross Plus had come out. And
was the mid-90s?
Oh, yes. Things were just coming back into steam again. With Kawamori coming back to the franchise, there's excitement, not just one project, but two. There was never a time before then, and even now, afterwards, that there was two Macross projects happening at the same time, with a potential for more. You guys were talking about the live-action film. We'll save that for another time. But because of that, I was like, I wanted to type up some of the stuff I've been gathering up.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when the website was, the World Wide Web was coming to its infancy.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, might as well put it up online. A lot of it had to do with, and America was needing someone to write articles. I happened to be in Japan, and I was able to help out with Macross Plus, and it kind of snowballed from there after I was able to meet someone from Bandai just to ask a roundabout way for permission. That's why I was able to get, it's an okay to put up that website at the time.
You know, I remember we didn't have internet cafes yet, at least not in London, or at least not in the areas that I used to frequent. And few people had internet connections at home. So I used to just go to my mom's office and several other offices on weekends or whatever, and just print out stuff from Macross Compendium and put them in a file.
I did exactly the same thing.
It blows my mind.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So in other words, again, Renato, you created the Macross Chronicles again, didn't you? It's all your idea.
Yes.
You put it in the same kind of three-ring binder.
Yeah, they I didn't write it, though. I'm not taking claim for having written it, though.
No,
it's different.
It's the format.
It still blows my mind how many people I've talked to over the years who've said they printed it out. It didn't occur to me that you would want this as a printout reference to read while you're watching.
These are Macross fans you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm totally humbled that people did that.
I think I had every page.
Yeah. Just imagine the amount of people that said you were wrong. he doesn't know what he's talking about.
And thank goodness the internet was not that evolved.
It was, people, for better or worse, accepted
it.
It was a one-way
communication.
Yeah, exactly.
Really.
Yeah. It wasn't Web 2.0 yet.
Yeah, most of us were like, how do you do that?
Yeah.
How do you put that little construction GIF and make it move?
Well, for me, what it was that it made me realize just how much I didn't know, because, especially with the timeline, you'd get characters' birthdays, and I think it was, people from, VFX or something like that, and I'd be like, I have no idea who this is.
Yeah. There's a character named Pocky, who I still have no idea who it is.
Oh, she's one of the...
Pinpoint Barrier Girls, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the reason I put this together, because it's my memory bank. I would not be able to remember all of this on my in my own head. So right. It's best to type it down in English so I can look it back and reference. And then it just went from there. It's like, well, other people might like it. So I put it up on the web.
Mm. Hmm.
So I'm glad you guys liked it because, yeah, it's come to the point you probably know more of the details there than I do because I don't remember all of this after all these years.
Well, I recommend you print the website out. So how many years would you say you were doing that for?
Wow. I guess that would see Macross Plus and Macross 7 just 1994. See, it was I was starting working on it before I put it on the web because back then I'm not sure how many of you knew the Wild West Days as Usenet user news groups.
Yeah,
I was posting up the chronology up over there because that was at a time when the chronology could fit. And it used it.
No, doesn't spread out over 80 issues.
Yes, definitely can't fit out there anymore. But because you know, people were wanting to find out Macross Plus, you know, Macross Plus, because of course Macross Plus, Kyle Moore had hand delivered when he came over to Anime Expo, real so people can watch it even before people in Japan. But Macross 7, there was no way except for you know the usual sneaker net and you know overseas mail with you know, videotapes.
Mm-hmm.
People wanted to know what was happening on the other side besides Macross Plus.
So, yeah, I think that's what I initially went to the site for because I hadn't seen Macross 7, so I wanted to know more about it.
Yeah.
Later, of course, I realized I would just go to Little Tokyo and rent the videos. But I think even after that, yeah, I'd watched it, but there was still so much that I didn't understand in it. So I was going to the compendium to try to, like, fill in the gaps.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that didn't come out in English. I remember when the first volume of Macross Plus came out, it came with a really helpful Macross, a future chronicle.
Right, yeah.
In that, well, yeah. Who can do that deep English voice the way they did it?
Well, Rin Min Mei's final concert.
There you go.
Mortal Kombat! Yeah.
Macross.
And that was actually, yeah, that was on the Hong Kong bootlegs back in the day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I had a bootleg videotape that had that.
Yeah,
on.
Same that here. Too, yeah. It's really terrible quality.
Mine was pretty good. It was like straight off of the LD. Lasers,
yeah.
And it was, it had Macross the Future Chronicle. It had a whole bunch of adverts, commercials and trailers and stuff.
She had the kudos.
And I think it had Macross Mecha Graffiti on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're getting the Future Chronicle on the Blu-ray box set from memory. So
okay, great.
Good to hear.
That means we can, that means we can use that voice for ringtones. Anyway, sorry.
You have reached Quinn's vault.
So you were talking about the Future Chronicle,
and that was the first road map for a lot of people, even Japan, because that was first shown when the advanced screening of Macross Plus, mm-hmm. which is, by the way, how they first got. The crowd scenes recorded for the second episode of Cheryl's concert. So the people who were in there saw the screening and said, oh, by the way, we have a concert in the next volume, but we don't have crowd noises. So you guys, when we say now, you know, scream, shout, share an apple and everything.
That's awesome, because isn't that exactly what they did for the second
Frontier? Exactly what they, what Save and I did, what Adrian and I did.
To get the fans in, and also, yeah, they could use
it. Oh, that makes sense now. Because... Mm-hmm. I have all of them on Laserdisc.
The liner
and
notes.
If you go to the liner notes, and they never reprinted this in any DVD, at the back, there is this wall of names.
Thanks to those guys.
It's like 500 names. Is your name there?
No, unfortunately, I got off the plane a day before that happened, so I wasn't able to get in. But there was a foreigner in there. There was a person that later on kept in touch in email. If you look through, there's a sea of kanji on there, but there's one name in katakana. That person is like one
is
of
John?
You. Huh? If you look,
did he have a handlebar mustache?
It was much shorter.
So just think about it. You can say you were there when not only you were there for the very first screening of the Macross Plus, you were actually recorded. You could be heard shouting for Sharon.
That's awesome. Okay, I'm gonna go back. Check for that name, and then he's going to be our guest for the next podcast, right? Right? Right?
If you can track him down.
Let's go for it. Well, with Facebook, how can you not?
Wow. Okay. And then, so when did you leave Japan and head back to the US?
I was there for studying abroad, but I liked it so much, I ended up going an extra semester. So I stayed there for longer than I was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
When I went back is when I started writing, continuing the Macross Companion, but started writing more work for Anime America. And that's how I slowly delved into the other side of the anime industry, working as a professional for that.
Okay.
Yeah. I think when I met you, it was maybe the fall before I moved here. So it was like fall of 2005, maybe. We met after, I think everyone met up over at Frankenstein's and then went to lunch. And
for people who don't know, Frankenstein is the mecca for all toy collectors in Southern California.
Yeah. It's the mecca.
So, and we all went to the boat. Mm-hmm. And then I met you.
Funny.
Thank you.
And you get your card was for with Anime America.
Mm-hmm.
But you had crossed your email out because you just only had that card as a business card because you weren't there anymore.
So. Yeah. It was about that year or the year later as when I went into Anime News Network.
So when was that?
Ooh. Well, 2000. I would have been about. I'm now about 6 years. So about 2006, 2007 is when I started working for Anime News Network.
And that was about the same time that the compendium moved to be the wiki, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just to make sure that it can keep on going if I'm not able to. No, because it's gone to the point. Look at the Chronicle binder.
And this is only the first 8 issues.
Exactly. It's amazing how much volume of information is out there for Macross. One person can't do it alone, so I'm glad there's other people pitching in on that. Gooba is like a number of the people working on
it. I haven't done anything for it in a long time, but I moved over all of the audio.
Thank you.
Information.
Because there's so much out there, and I'm glad because that just means that Macross as a story, as a franchise, it's growing. Fans are still coming. I mean, who would have figured that Macross Frontier would bring this entire new generation who were not even born when the first TV series came out.
So have you experienced much of that? I mean, I know you're in Japan once or twice a year, but even like from where you are in the US, have you managed to get a feel for the kind of impact Frontier has had?
Fortunately, I've kept ties with people who are at my alma mater. And so I see people at the club, I see people at the expo, and seeing people, once again, who were not even alive when the first TV series came out, all sort of big Macross fans. It's what's most heartening for them, for me, is when I find these people, Frontier fans, they got into Macross, and then they go back and discover not just Do You Remember Love, but the TV series. I was surprised that they're able to accept it, despite all of the animation errors, all of the, trouble they had getting those episodes out every week. They get hooked into it. It's for all of the drama, all of the romance, all of the characters, they get into it for the same reasons we do. So I was just amazed and kind of heartened by that, because you've seen that, right? You've seen people who are coming in from Frontier, and they discovered the TV series, the first one, and it's like, it's great.
From experience, I've found, and this is anecdotal, I can only speak for Japan from first-hand experience, and anecdotally for the US, but I just hear that it's more common for, say, Frontier fans in Japan to go back and watch older versions of the show than has been the case in the US, where it seems to have been. There has been some new fans, but it also seems to have been mostly existing fans, like, this is New Macross, meh, like the mecha, didn't like this, meh, next, and they just moved on, is the vibe I get. But, I mean, as someone in the US, how do you think US fans have taken the Frontier?
Well, there's first of all that barrier because of the various issues, which would be take too long to cover here.
Postage fees.
Yeah, just getting access to Frontier is a bit tougher than, say, Macross Plus or Macross 2. But the ones that do get it, they knew what they were doing, because you look at all the characters in Macross Frontier, there's a little something for every person, every complex out there. Something for the guys, something for the girls. And then I don't know whether they'll, like you said, will they'll keep coming back, but some of the ones I met, I don't do my proselytize, I don't evangelize too much, so I was surprised when they started picking up Macross, the first TV series and everything else. I do think it's bringing a new generation of continuing Macross fans. They're not just staying with Frontier, but continuing, because there's so much great stuff to see.
A lot of the people I've talked to, because over the years, there's different anime fans in the States, because I lived there for a long time before I came here, all my life. And there was a lot of anime fans that had no interest in watching Macross or the Robotech version. But a lot of those same people ended up liking Frontier. They don't want to go back, but Frontier actually gets them into talking about the characters, and most of them are usually like, I could do without the mecha. Because have you met anybody like that where you've talked about Frontier in the past? I mean, Macross in the past, and they're just kind of like, nah, not for me. And then Frontier came out, and they're like, have you seen Frontier? And you're like, yeah.
Yeah, there's some ambivalent fans. There's some that will watch the flavor of the month. Whatever the current season is, they'll see that. That's not going to change. There's people who are going to insist Gundam Wing was the first and best Gundam series. You know?
Right. We're here.
This is the end of the podcast. Yes. We're signing off, and we'll see you next
time. I will agree with this. Because I did not fall asleep during it. No.
I'm here with you, Richard. I'm here for you.
It's a joke. I kid.
Oh, you mean everything you said has been a joke so far? Like Macross 2 as well?
It all makes sense.
There ain't no fun.
Rather abrupt.
Joke, man. Jesus.
Anyways,
I'm going
to... if I can make a brief detour back to your initial period in Japan again. Because I mentioned this during the first or second podcast, in that why I started doing event reviews was because of one review I came across in college. And that was a review by you of the 15th anniversary One Night Stand.
Oh, that was
concert.
Yeah, that was one to remember. Yeah.
As far as I know, you wrote the only surviving English language account of the gig. Granted, it's now archived on a dead website, so I want to get it off there quick. But yeah, that's why I went into writing reviews when concert reports when Frontier came out, because an experience is one of the few things that can't be bootlegged or downloaded. Now,
it's personal to each person who goes through it, so everyone has something to contribute when they talk about what they went through in the concert.
Right. I mean, you can't bootleg the fact that Adrian and I went to a Chair concert and we met a girl who had handmade Firebomber stockings. Not something even an official DVD would have in it. But I want you to go back and tell us about that event.
It was amazing. I remember, like, we were just talking before this about how there was Firebomber jackets that were made during that same time. Mm-hmm. What I didn't mention is I came to that concert with the Macross Skull Leader jacket that I had just got for that anniversary. Oh. So just because... when do you get too many chances to wear something like that?
You talking about leather jacket?
Yep, the leather jacket.
With the black scroll, the skull on the back.
Yep, that's the one. Yeah.
How much was that?
I try not to think about those things.
I remember the leaflet that was printed on it. It was a lot. I don't remember.
So where is this jacket now?
Back in America right now. I don't bring it out to you because I learned the hard way. You know that concert was in the summertime?
Right.
Not a good time to wear a leather jacket in Tokyo. Not a good time. Yeah. So I learned the hard way there. But hey, except for that, I mean, that was the first concert where you got the multiple generations. Mm-hmm. It wasn't called Crossover because, they hadn't, that would come 10 years later.
Was there not even enough? Well, the first time they called it Crossover was, 2009.
It was actually called The One Night Stand.
Which
was a great name.
So
almost like VD.
Who was the
Charlie Macross?
You got 15 years later. You got VD. That was a great one night stand.
You get it.
I'm waiting for the drums. I need the drums. But
hi guys, pretty good.
So who run us through the lineup? Who was there?
It was all the singers. It was all of them. We're talking about starting. No, it started off Ishtar with Macross 2. Got to sing songs. We got Macross Plus, Akino Arai, and Yoko Kanno was there. Is that like we were talking before all of this? How Yoko Kanno doesn't necessarily come to all the concerts. She was there, over there, and then of course, then it got to the part got people on their feet. Macross 7's Firebomber. There's one thing that was different, a vibe about like everyone else do power ballads, people do pop songs, but something about when you get Macross 7's Firebomber on stage, everyone gets on their feet, everyone's pumping their fists. It was like completely different concert. And then of course the crowning moment was when Maria Jimmy comes on, sings all the classics, including at the very end, Do You Remember Love.
And she actually closed it.
Yeah, she did. Huh.
And this was before, like, the Mari Ijima sings Lin Min Mei. So she was doing the old, like, the arrangements from the series.
Oh, wait. Elaine sings Lin Min Mei?
No, Mari Ijima sings.
Oh, yeah, that was before
when,
that.
So
yeah.
That was when she started doing that version of My Boyfriend's a Pilot.
Although, so she was doing the TV arrangements for all the songs.
Although, if I remember correctly, she did then what she does now, which was the piano accompaniment by herself and singing the song. So that's what she was doing at that point, too.
Well, I was thinking more of like My Boyfriend is a Pilot or Zero G Love.
Because they've both changed completely now.
That's true.
Because she can't do the original versions anymore. Chia covers them pretty well, though. Yeah,
no, you were going to mention that. Yeah, it's not all the singers, though, right? Because Chie Kajiura, I thought, was having a baby at the time.
Right. You remember this more than I do, actually, yeah.
Well, I just read it in your article.
So it was Fukuyama Band, basically. Okay.
Well, was it Fukuyama Band, or was it just
It was before they called it Fukuyama.
Yeah, it was Hummingbird.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow. So, I mean, what compelled you to write that report?
Well, partly because I wanted to continue what I was doing before. People are not going to see it. There's people in Japan who didn't get a chance to go to the concert. So pointing the word out what happened there was hard. Also, by that time, I was writing up for another website. You mentioned it, ex.org. And I was like, hey, that's another thing. That's one other thing that I was doing, experiencing Japan. That's something to write up.
And I must make a note that if you go to ex.org, they have a very useful guide of the best Dreamcast and PlayStation 1 games to buy. but all right, then.
And new Cowboy Bebop movie.
Yeah. So let's jump forward then, because another time I came across your name, Egan, was when I picked up the original Macross box set.
Ah.
It's Region 4, it's Madman, and it's got all these liner notes.
These Australian booklets are much better than the ones that came with the American thing, where they were just like cards, basically.
But what I noticed was in one in particular, we've got three of them in front of us here, courtesy of Renato, who keeps everything.
Why would I throw it away?
And here we go. It's the episode guide for, I'm not sure which disc it was in, but in the back it says, the liner notes are based solely on the opinions of and research conducted by none other than Egan Liu. So
you added a none other part, right?
And these are really good notes. And what was the deal behind these? Were these originally included in that remaster, the first? Like, how did your notes, like, was this separate to what you did online?
They're in the Omega. Yeah.
So how did you get approached to do this? What happened?
It happened because everyone knew each other when it came to cons in America. Mm-hmm. I remember that time very clearly because it happened to be Anime Expo was when Anime Ego announced that they were doing, for the first time, the complete subtitle Macross television series in English.
Mm.
And just so happened that was Anime Expo 1999, which was held July 17th. 1999.
Wow. Okay.
Which completely coincidental. But if anyone knows,
1999, July 17th, Animego announces subtitle version of what you're watching right now.
Animego will continue in the fish way. No, that's wrong.
Yeah, that
just pure coincidence. Animego probably did not realize it at the time that they were announcing it on the day
that
South Ontario Island would be hit by the Macross in the Macross time. Completely coincidental.
Maybe they didn't expect to survive the impact. And they said, yeah, we're going to release it.
One last announcement. Boom.
And actually, the liner notes for the Animego, I mean, that's more detailed than the episode sheets in Macross Chronicle.
take pages and pages to describe one thing.
Well, I was talking about, like, the like in the episode sheets for Macross Chronicle, they talk about, oh, well, Hikaru's VF1D crashes into Studio Nue. But the liner notes talk about how it also crashes into Artland and Studio Nue and kills a guy. You know, it's it's one of the most detailed things I've seen, and it was really great to read, and I really appreciated it when I got the Animego set.
I was really annoyed by them, because I got them, I was like, I want to watch the discs, but I got to read this first. I finally get remastered, you know, in PAL territory, subtitle release, but I got to read first, because, But yeah, no, they were great.
Oh, thanks, yeah. Oh, the nice thing is, well, I first want to put in a word about how Animego, we're talking about the cards they were released. The reason they did cards for them, because they were looking towards the collectors who were buying all of the releases, Urusei Yatsura, Bubblegum Crisis, and then when you get all the cards, you can put them all together, sort of like what they're doing with Macross Chronicles. You can you know, collect them all, pull them out, put them in a place that you can have your treasure trove of all the trivia, treasure trove of all your songs, in all in one place. So and, that's their thinking for that.
Yeah, and Animego was well known for that. I mean, the Urusei Yatsura notes were...
Even in the UK, those were coming over.
Those were exhaustive, you know, like really good information.
Right. If there's, if you guys are complimenting the exhaustiveness of our notes, it's because I wanted to make sure we lived up to the standard. You saw, if you ever seen the Otakuno video, liner notes.
Yeah. Oh,
that
my God,
is
yeah,
something
yeah.
that needed, especially for the American fan, to know all the minutiae of the otaku culture that people don't realize even in Japan. Yeah, I wanted to make sure I lived up to the standard Animego was going for. And yeah, fortunately, when they called upon me to do it, that's
For preparing for those liner notes, did you just watch all the episodes again, like freeze frame, and just kind of?
Printed out some websites.
The nice thing is like if you look at the old version of Macross Pandemonium, there's a lot of that material that was already there.
Right, right.
I was doing that. See, I was fortunate when I was in Japan when I was there for Macross. I was like, okay, I'm gonna go watch the TV series again. Unfortunately, there was a videotape release of it. With this wonderful artwork by both Mikimoto and Kawamori, wonderful posters that they made. And I was able to watch. I did freeze frame. That's when I first noted, oh, that's what Studio Inoue gets nuked in the first episode. Artland gets nuked in the first episode. So that was all I had written up. So I was already had that stuff ready to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
And and thank you for pointing especially out the... what was it? It was the, I think, episode... Well, there was that, but there was episode, I think it was 15, with the Valkyrie with the girl in the bikini in the back, or like a poster of a girl in the bikini that says sex and Seiko on it.
Believe me, I don't look out for it. Really, seriously.
But
fortunately...
But you pointed all this stuff out on the in the liner notes, and that... I'm not sure I would have noticed these things without that. So it's really, and I mean, even Renato was saying that on the Blu-ray, you were noticing like things like that in pretty much every episode, right?
Yeah, there's a lot.
And yeah, it was like I never would have seen this if it weren't for the liner notes.
For that, you gotta thank the animators. You think about they have to go week in, week out, make sure they pump out 30 minutes. Not necessarily like the late great Nomura Ishiguro talked about how for some episodes they were finishing just in time to deliver the episodes to each of the stations half an hour before it aired.
Right.
So that meant they had to take the reels, the actual film reels for each episodes. Have a person go down the train to each of the stations that were showing Macross, and go have someone waiting at each station. Here's the reel for this today's episode, and off they go to the next.
And then there was the one that they left on the train, right?
Ouch. Who knows where that is now, and who's the collector that has it now? But because of that, you got these animators under the gun, making sure to do, and they get a little stir crazy, and they start throwing in things just because they need to, burn off all of that stress they have.
Right.
So you get this wonderful detail, and I didn't always catch all of this myself. The Japanese side of things have done that. Like for example, you mentioned this the sexy cameo that was in the Valkyrie cockpit.
Right.
That was something that was pointed out, I believe, by the book Macross Dictionary.
Okay.
There was a booklet. Despite its name, it was just a thin booklet that was released as a supplement to a magazine.
That somewhere too. I went to look for it. It's in the UK.
Oh, okay.
I went to look for it. It's amongst boxes and boxes and boxes, and I couldn't find it.
But it sounds like someone I know.
Yeah, like you. Right? Yeah, we're all in the same boat, man.
Because it was for that time. It came out after the TV series had ended. You look through it. It's the best reference.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. Personally, I want to go through and count all the times that the number of times that the names Seiko and Akina show up.
So
I wonder how many people were fans in the staff. Yeah.
Important question then. If we were to make Macross today, whose name would we be putting in the background?
Well,
it wouldn't be Minegishi, I know that much.
Well, you can actually watch and see some of the Easter eggs. Like, yeah, there's still Easter eggs being thrown into Frontier. Right. So you guys have spotted a couple of them, right? Any particular favorites come to mind?
Well, I have my favorite. Go for it. The one of the missile shots, like one of the Itano Circus missile things. One of the missiles is an Apple Genki.
That's a reference to Itano, right?
That's a double reference. Of course, right. It's the Budweiser can, but it's Macross Zero. Right. Yeah. So that one...
That's clever, yeah.
Well, then you've got the sequel to Frontier, AKB-048, which refers to Frontier. And Rank a Star and all this stuff.
Well, no. The one I like is one which I discovered very, very recently. Again, thanks to the magic of Blu-ray. Which is in Macross 7, actually. Where one of the Valkyries is... blown up, and amongst the wreckage you can see a tiny, tiny, teeny, puny Minmay doll.
Huh, okay.
Inside a cockpit.
Oh.
I thought you were going to go for the Dokonjo Gaiden. Or...
Oh, there is that as well, yeah. No, but I already mentioned that in the previous podcast.
Right. Yeah. Well, I want to move on to something a little bit more recent, but before I do, is there anything else any of you guys want to run by, Egan? While we're going strapped to this chair, unable to move.
You are laying me out now.
We've taken his computer away. He's no longer allowed to update. All right,
I have one thing which I probably shouldn't bring up, but it's... I always wish that the Macross Compendium had listed sources.
You're right.
It was later when I started getting the Japanese books and like really going through them that I was like, oh, okay, so this is where this came from. I'm thinking maybe I should go into the wiki and put in the sources myself.
And we're still looking for that Dynamite 7 appreciation.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because there was the
Anime V. One of the issues of Anime V apparently had some manga. And it's kind of my fault because I don't remember exactly. I always forget what issue it's supposed to be.
Right, but you said the MAV had become Looker by that point, right?
Maybe, yeah. Or it might actually be the last one.
Yeah. It was still Anime V at that point, and then Looker, and then nothing.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, what is that? Because I have never come across any other reference that was the English appreciation or English anticipation manga or something like that.
Oh, okay. There was one of the few things that they did to promote English Fire. There was this odd... I mean, it was the most unusual...
No, tell us what you really think. Come
on. For some reason, they decided that to get even more people buying Fire Bomber songs is to have singers, studio musicians in Tennessee, Nashville, record... The Firebomber song with English lyrics.
Not record the songs, just put vocals over the karaoke tracks.
But no, hang on a second. But are you sure you're not confusing the Tennessee recording with Acoustic Fire? Because that's when they brought the actual singers like Chiekajira and Fukuyama to Nashville to record and play with actual country musicians.
I'm trying to remember if the English Fire one was also recorded there as well.
I don't know. My guess is probably just they took foreign vocalists who are here in Tokyo.
I have to check on that to find out.
Because the arrangements are all the same.
They just took the same.
The necessity of having them in Nashville. I know. We're aware of that and how they don't sound anything like Firebomber.
The
maybe that's
only Firebomber album I've only listened to once.
And so, never again.
And anyway, you were saying.
And it was just a short little manga that they did just to promote that this thing was coming out. And it was just how it the reaction by the real Fireman Bomber finding out that there's this band that's making their cover songs.
Oh, that's cool.
Because there's a whole story that these people who her whose names, if you spell them out, rearrange it, becomes names of the
one of them's called Rack Nakebasi.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they put a little short little manga that just explains all of that.
Well, do you still have that?
I should. The problem is, like a lot of us, is somewhere.
Boxes, yeah. Right, yeah.
So I have to find it. Yeah.
Well, I know where it should be. Is it a booklet inside, or is it part of the magazine?
Part of the magazine.
Okay. Well, in that case, it's definitely at the university.
Oh, really?
In that subculture museum thing.
Okay.
Oh, so you could... You have the most wonderful reference.
Have you been there yet?
No.
I'll take you when... Well, we'll arrange something.
Okay.
he always says that. He never takes you.
I took you.
No, you haven't.
Yeah.
No.
What?
I haven't been there. You haven't taken me. You're always like... Was it Howard? No. I think you're talking about Patrick Macias. That's who you took.
No, I didn't take him. No, he went and he filmed
this would be, of course, one of the original sketches of a... Yeah.
You take me.
Who's on first? All right, I'll take you both.
It just sounds worse, however you put it. So, having been involved, seeing Japanese Macross fandom from the mid-90s,
mm-hmm.
I'm very interested in knowing what you thought of seeing modern Macross fandom today, because we went to see a special screening of the new Blu-ray release of Macross FB7. That laugh tells me.
I didn't see it.
And, you know, they had a cast talk show afterwards. So basically they played the version that's from the Blu-ray, which had some changes made to it. They wouldn't tell us exactly what they changed, but they assured everyone that there were some small edits made.
Really?
But we went there and they had...
You didn't notice it?
Well, they said it was things like the crowd in background shots. Yeah. But they had the director again.
Oh! I know what they changed. Because it's in the trailer.
Okay.
If you look at the scene where... Spoilers. spoilers for something that doesn't have a story. If you look at the scene where the two Valkyries show up, they are the Valkyries that they should be. Whereas in the original film, it's the Fire Valkyrie plus some VF-25 kind of thing, which is dressed up to look like Millennium Valkyrie.
Right.
This time it actually is Millennium Valkyrie.
Because they asked who noticed the differences, and no one put their hands up.
Because everyone is just, I don't know.
What's his name? Amino, who's the director.
They also had
Nobutoshi Kanna, who's Basso's voice actor. They had Sakurai Tomo, who of course is Milan's voice actress. And they had, he's a new name for me at least, Akio Tsuyama, who was Gavel. Which meant he had to do that running gag of putting "bee" on the end of every other sentence. Can't you be? But yeah, and they had...
He was also physical, so he could have said, D3, you're okay.
They had a fair mix, I think, of older fans and newer fans, you know, between the Frontier stuff and the Seven stuff.
Unfortunately, you want to throw in some recent Macross news regarding a...
Yeah.
Macross 7 character, voice actors.
But yeah, so Kaoru Shimamura, who played Rex in Macross 7, passed away at only 43 years of age, which was a downer. It seems we've lost a lot of people anime-related recently.
Wait, did they talk about that?
At the event, no.
Really?
But Rex has one scene in FP7. She appears once. And
that's more than we can say for Gammon.
He appears once, too.
Yeah.
Really?
And yeah, that was a bit of a downer seeing her there. But what did you think of FB7? I'm gonna ask. And feel free for spoilers because there are no spoilers.
There are no spoilers. And also feel free to be honest because none of us liked it.
The movie is a spoiler.
I guess, as in a way, a backhanded compliment. I'm glad you guys set and lowered my expectations appropriately enough.
Yeah, and you went to a special talk show event. We didn't.
So all you got was the movie and nothing else.
Yeah.
And what was it? Maybe
Renato and I got something good.
Forget. Well, and the talk show, like the one last year, is also going on the Blu-ray.
Okay.
So that's two talk shows on the Blu-ray on top. They're trying to jam-pack as many extras in there to make you care.
They're trying to make the movie an extra, and look, here's a bunch of stuff.
Why don't they put the music culture on it? Then
right.
I would be eager to buy it.
Right.
Are you not going to buy it anymore?
Probably eventually.
I'm
going to
get it for the concert.
That's just good.
Okay.
Anyway.
I know you're going to buy it, so I'll just watch your copy.
Yeah, I was waiting for that.
But they need to make a special Red Bull edition so you can have something to keep you awake. That thing is just a waste of time.
So, Egan, you're saying?
Hard to say, because you can see where they were thinking, even when you come to the name, Macross FB7, that they were thinking flashback, 2012, the Macross 7 version. And, well, if there's one thing Macross 7 needed, was a good edit. We didn't get that, but yes. Yeah. Because it's the longest TV Macross series by far, right?
Right.
So, and it could really have used some tightening, some focus.
Right.
And I hadn't seen Macross 7 in ages. Mm-hmm. So it was a bit of a nostalgia kick to see some of the characters, music, reminder how much fun the music was. And coming back to not just that, but the Frontier characters. Because unless something new happens, that might be the last new animation of the Frontier characters we'll see in a long time, if ever.
That's a good point.
In a long time, because who knows what will happen in the next anniversary. But
yeah,
it would be a while until we'll see more footage of those characters. But yeah, so I didn't see it as a standalone movie. I didn't see it as something I should see as a story, but just like a series of clips. Because we were talking about how no one who has not seen Macross 7 will understand what's going on.
Let's ask Howard here. Howard likes to go against the grain a bit. Oh, what was your?
Yeah, we haven't heard the take on
FP7. Yeah, what do you think about FP7?
It could have used a little more editing. There was the opportunity for it to be better than it was. I'm glad I got to see it in the theaters. I'm glad it was in the theaters.
Yeah.
And
I'm not.
Even after the bad reviews, I went because I need to support more Macross in the theaters.
Did you go with Howard too?
Hideaki Anno policy.
No, just went on my own.
I just wanted your own. Did Howard too see it?
I think so.
Any reaction or just?
He wasn't too happy with it.
At the beginning of it, they showed a whole bunch of Macross trailers for the game, for the 7 box sets. And also for the upcoming Macross Plus Blu-ray box set. And this is the first time that trailer's been shown to my knowledge. It's not on the website. It's not on YouTube yet. And they showed on the cinema screen that awesome artwork by Tengen, which is still not available anyway, which is annoying. But I've got to ask, Egan, seeing the animation blown up on a big screen, how do you think it held up?
For Macross 7?
For FP7.
Some of it... some of it comes off better than others. The was amazing thing about, or not so amazing thing about FP7, it brought the good and the bad, the warts and all, onto the screen. So some of it looked good. Some of the mecha animation, when they were had a good time to work on it in the TV series, looked good.
I like the backgrounds, don't you think? Especially the Macross 7 itself. You see all the building details, all the mechanical details. Everything. Well, that's blown up on the big screen. That looks really, really good.
One thing I missed that I wish they had done with FP7, which they did for the first Macross 7, the movie, was take that wonderful opening animation where you get that pan away from the City 7.
Mm.
They had rendered that in theatrical quality animation.
Mm.
So when you see that in the big screen, it was like... what was great, decent CG then was shown to be really great CG then. Mm. And it still would hold up. But we don't have a Blu-ray of that yet.
Well, we have the TV show.
That's right. That's the TV series. So we have that now. But to see it on the big screen.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Well, here's hoping there's a theatrical screening for the Plus remaster box.
It definitely deserves. Macross Plus on the big screen is not to be missed.
But anyways, I think we'll round things out here. So thank you for your time, Egan. I'll let you get back to work. You're kind of shaking. Is it because you're not near your computer?
I'm still strapped in, man. You guys are letting me out now, right?
It's like the gambling chair.
All right. So let's move on.
となっております。では聞いてください。プラネットクレイドル。
Get down here. We have something to talk about.
All right.
Because the latest piece of Macross lore is upon us. 1 year this after Macross Frontier. We have Macross 30. It's out. The game is out. We've played it. Speak for myself.
That's not going to get old.
I'm going to come with one of those paper fans next time so I can slap you with it. So, it's out. Let's put our cards on the table here. I've played about 30 hours of it. I'm taking my time. I'm in no particular rush. Renato, how's your progress?
I think I'm like 11 or 12 hours.
Oh. Okay.
It's not very much. Well, you should start because you have a background in
buying things, gameology. Buying things.
I bought
first of all, let's talk packaging because that's something everyone here has kind of seen, whether you've played it or not.
Well, where is it? Do you have it? Bring it.
Bring it! We're going to have a radio unboxing because that suits the
medium. Radio unboxing. Yeah.
All right.
So, first of all, Tengen art. It looks really, really good.
Mm.
And then you, what you do is you take out.
On it.
Is there?
Oh, wait, no, that's correct. Sorry.
Oh. Anyway, you take out the Blu-ray box, and then it's like, oh, is this a girl game? Is this a mecha game? Which is it? Well, I don't know. I'm confused. So,
all the girls on the cover is what you're referring to?
Yeah.
So, extras-wise, and we're going to get to the digital extras momentarily, because I think those need to be touched upon, Renato.
Yes.
I know you had some misgivings, but, of course, you know, you have the character settings.
Nice.
lot of these are reprints, though.
Well, they're using the character settings of each show.
Right.
Not necessarily the artwork produced for this actual game.
But Adrian
points
something out.
But they also include the new stuff.
They do. Adrian points something out, I think, which was that a lot of the Macross Zero stuff in this, it's probably some of the only Macross Zero stuff we've seen in an easily available, officially available booklet.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of this is in the Chronicles, but there was no This Is Animation Macross Zero book made.
Yeah, there was going to be a similar kind of book. They canceled it because, you know.
Yeah. So it actually has a fair amount of Zero materials in it. And this is probably the only way you can get it.
Yeah, it's good that they managed to bring it out eventually.
I'm not saying you can't get these offline. It's just in a booklet form.
Mm. Right. And then we have... get to that one in a moment. Of course, there was the poster reprints, the layout Genga shoe, and
they're
all. Well, I mean, it's just going to waste time. And then the here we go, the digital contents catalog, which is really cool. Actually, they've got some really, really, really old stuff in this book.
Yeah, it's basically
every
the podcast that Beef and I made. There you go. Everything that we talked about. Except I never knew that there was VFX 2 popcorn. Yeah. They had a special offer where, what is it? If you send in something. Yeah, there's a trial edition, a special edition of VFX 2 with a special stage that you can win.
The nice thing about that particular edition, you get to play the VF5000 in that game. Like you don't get to play in the VFX2, the original game, and they were planning to do for the American release.
Yeah,
and replace the VF1 for.
Thanks, Harmony Gold.
So yeah, it's a little extra. I think it's the only time this stuff will be recorded and. There's an Easter egg in there for any of our listeners who actually go through their extras.
Yes, it's a
hopefully Maya 29. Hopefully they'll find it. But that's all.
No, I want to talk about
it. He's going into it. Here we go.
I don't care. There's a story.
I thought we were going to talk about the game, but apparently we have other plans.
No. All right. Yes, sometime last year, those guys did this podcast on video games. That would be Renato and Veith. And we listened to it. I think we all listened to it. And then they covered a lot of content. And I remember them talking about, there's this game and I've never actually seen it, blah, blah, blah. And so maybe about 3 months after that podcast came out, me and you, Totoro, we went to Mandarake and Nakano. And we're walking around, just looking for stuff. And we came past the Mandarake and Nakano. They have a game... You know, they just focus on vintage games.
Yeah.
But they have a glass case that faces outside the store, inside the hallway. And we're walking by, and I'm like, I look at every glass case when I go in there. Mm. So I was just like, I'm like, hey, have you ever seen that game before? That looks odd. And Totoro starts looking at it. I'm like, no, never really seen it. What's this system? It's called the Arcadia. I'm like, Bandai.
You see how it's all cyclical? It all comes back.
So... Goodbye, I don't know what it is. He doesn't know what it is. So I said, let's ask Renato. So we both we snap a photo, mail it to Renato. He emails back, only saying, buy it.
No. He said, if you don't buy it, I want it.
Yeah.
I was like, screw you, I'll buy it.
I don't even remember this.
Yeah, but you replied back basically saying, buy it. And I tell him,
okay.
He says, buy it. That automatically means he's going to buy it, Totoro, even though he doesn't have the system played on. So we look at it.
It's a stamp kit all over again.
And he buys it. And for about a week, he starts looking to buy the actual game system.
Oh, God.
And then he tried bidding on it, couldn't get it, and then it just goes in the closet.
Well, either
Where
way.
Where is it? Is it here?
It's here.
What are we doing?
What? We can have the system at the moment.
Everyone's got this game, man. Let's just talk about this game. Let's talk about that game.
So anyways.
Either way, keep going.
So what happens is So we all see this game. It's kind of weird. We all want to see what it's like.
It's in great condition as well.
Yes, the box was in almost mint condition. A little bit of a crease. And
it's 30 years old.
Yeah, it's a 30-year-old game.
It's like before Do You Remember Love.
Yeah, it's cartridge-based, right?
Yeah, the cartridge is the size of someone's forearm.
And what was the name of the system?
Like Neo Geo.
So in Japan, it was called the Arcadia, but overseas
In Japan, it was the Bandai Arcadia. Overseas was just the Arcadia. And Bandai licensed it to re-release it here with their branding on it. As a result, I mean, it's basically a ColecoVision era MSX.
Yeah.
ColecoVision era thing, system. And as a result, there are only four Japan-only titles. Every other title came out in both regions. And among those four only titles were two licensed IP. So there was a Gundam title and a Macross title. I don't know what the other two were.
Minky Momo?
No, they weren't. They were just generic games. But it was, in great condition. And just as a collector's item, it was great.
Yeah. So Gwen bought it. And we didn't do anything with it. And eventually, I don't know, about maybe 2 or 3 months later.
The problem with you guys, you buy stuff and don't do anything with it. I buy stamp kits, make it, show you.
Because then I would have to religiously carry it with me everywhere I go, like you do with that stamp kit. So one time I end up telling Tenjin this story about how we found this video game. And he's like, well, what video game is this? I'm like, well, it's this one. And we start looking into it. We both start researching it on our phone. And he's like, oh, I've never heard of this system before. I didn't know anything about this game. And at the time, he doesn't mention anything other than he's never heard of it. And I tell him a story that I just told.
Yeah.
And about October of last year, he approaches me saying, can I take a look at that game?
Yeah.
I'm like, what, the game that I was telling you about that we found? He's like, yeah, because no one has it. I'm like, nobody has it? He's like, no one has that game. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, do you want to play? Because we don't have the system. And he's like, no, just like, he's like, well, I'm working on the Macross 30 right now. And they're talking about, making a little booklet to go with the game. Yeah, but they want to have the whole history of Macross video games. So I was like, well, you're going to have to talk to Gwen because he has it. And you should probably talk to Renato. He just did a pretty extensive podcast about the video games. So he's like, oh, okay. So, and he has all our contacts. So I assumed he contacted you.
Yeah. And actually, I don't know if he contacted me before or after we met at this exhibition, the Cat and Dragons.
Yeah,
he was saying something about, we want to make this booklet.
Because I had met him before that exhibit, because I was going to go the same day.
Yeah, no. I think he emailed me before then.
Yeah. So I told him to contact you, and I told this guy.
Oops.
And we ended up having a dinner with him, and you brought, not only did he bring that game, Gwen spent dinner. Like, because once Gwen found out that
they needed
Tenjin needed some help, with games, he spent like a whole week compiling this list, a spreadsheet. Yep. And then we eventually.
Oh, so that was you.
That was me.
Yeah. He sent me that. I was like, wow, some dude. But
it was in Japanese. That's why he probably didn't hear.
Yeah, no. I thought it was someone from Bandai Visual.
Yeah.
And these are all the things that people at Bandai Visual had found.
No,
but it's not. It's just all the stuff that you.
What? Yeah. It wouldn't have had those games at the very bottom broken out. If Bandai had
what were those?
The Robotech ones.
Right. Yeah. Right, because I noticed those and I was like, oh, they've really done their homework. They really know. No, some gaijin was involved. Okay, that makes sense.
So we end up going to a dinner and
Battle Cry Invasion.
He brought
Crystal Battle Dreams was on there.
Yes, Crystal Dreams was on there.
Okay, hell.
There was a reason for that. Yeah. I had footage for him for sure.
Yeah.
So. Uh-huh.
We all had dinner. He brought his laptop and he showed him Crystal Dreams, Battle Cry, Invasion.
He said, I can't, I shouldn't have eaten the red hot chili.
No, and then he even brought the Battle Cry special box that came with the t-shirt and all that stuff.
Wait, you have that?
Yeah.
That's a big closet in my room, man.
Yeah. Oh, but the funny part is, like, Tenya starts looking through, like, the extra materials, and there's, like, the Jack Archer sketches, right? The, like, the pre-production Jack Archer sketches. And the funny thing was, is I don't know who, but somebody with the character design put the, I guess, the character's name in kanji.
Oh, and, like, God. No. Faux pas, man.
Tenjin goes, I think they made a mistake. I'm like, why? He's like, well, the it says his name or whatever, but this kanji means weak. I think they picked the wrong kanji.
Actually, no, they got it right.
No, like, yeah. They got it right. Maybe they were talking about the illustrator. I don't know. Yeah, like, so
is the kanji for lame?
I don't know. And you had brought somebody.
Well, no, I did that, and then I brought basically clips of the majority of games on that list to make sure you knew what was what.
Yeah.
And so he went back and reached out to everyone, including you, Renato, and Japanese fans. And I spoke with the number one Macross fan, and he was like, yeah, I had anything the Bandai didn't have. He's like, I had everything except that weird Arcadia game. So number one Macross fan does not have that game.
There's a lot of stuff.
So they couldn't find a copy of it anywhere. So I ended up scanning, doing the highest resolution scan I could do. Of the back and front of the box and the manual. I didn't take any photos. So, if you look in that booklet, you may notice there's no picture of the cartridge itself, just some high-quality scans of the box, which were the ones I sent.
But if you look at the booklet itself, what it does have, it's got a timeline that runs parallel to the timeline of the releases of each game that describes... at what point and what date the different series, macro series, were aired and released. And the one screen cap that they used for the original show is from episode 3 with the horrible animation from the Star Pro. So, what's the deal there?
Oh.
So, well, for our input and all of Gwyn's hard work, we were... given a thank you. And at the end of that book, we get thank you credits along with Tenjin. So.
Yay!
Yay.
So. We are now...
underneath that picture of popcorn.
Yes. What does anybody know? Is that because of that bag of popcorn?
Because of the bag of popcorn that was the pre-release version of VFX 2.
So yes. Our names have gone down in Macross history.
Once again.
Well, this is not the first book you guys have been thanking.
Yeah, but that one...
that shall not be spoken of right now. All right.
But the on the front cover, that pile of games, that's actually Bandai Namco's personal archive.
But the Arcadia is
but there. No, that was actually in the mock-up. If you looked at the mock-up, they showed the Arcadia. But that's what they actually have.
Oh,
but they don't have the Arcadia. They are the one that Gwyn has.
So
okay, well, just to like put it in a way, the number one Macross fan, he's kind of like the Oracle. So like, if he doesn't have it, it's strange.
It does. Like, he has every single issue of the Robotech.
He didn't have the Milan poster that I had.
The what?
Milan poster.
Well, he probably wouldn't remember.
He said he'd never seen it.
Okay, which poster was this?
It's one in Anime V magazine, because I found it while I was looking for this thing, this Holy Grail that Egan was describing, the manga with Fire Bomber American. Maybe he doesn't have that either. There you go. One thing, can I criticize one thing about this booklet?
You may.
Just one thing, I love it. I think it's great. I think there's one thing they should have noticed.
Bigger
that they
font
probably
for
didn't.
Your name? No?
No. In the description of Macross Scrambled Valkyrie, they failed to mention the most important thing about that game, which is that you fire the Min-Mei cannon.
Oh, you were talking
and
about
you
this.
Can absorb, not absorb, but kind of get enemies to fight on your side. Yeah. Kind of like Macross 7. So if you look at the designs for that game, they're all by Kawamori. And it's like VF1, updated VF1s with sound boosters almost. But this is before Macross 7. Mm. So for me, that game is kind of a link between the original show and Macross 7. But there's no neglect. They neglected to mention that. There's no mention of it. And they do say that you can choose three characters and the three Valks are different and the three weapon types for each mode
is different.
Okay,
but it's not there. It's not a bog standard shooter that is that just has different weapons.
Yeah, they should have kind of.
The unique thing is that you can absorb enemies.
Now we have a huge tray of jelly beans here, guys. What do you call this in the US?
They're called jelly bellies.
Oh, jelly bellies. Yeah,
assorted
yeah.
flavors.
Well,
you had these in the UK as well.
So help yourselves to these because I want us to sound less coherent.
That's cool. Well, I want to say one thing. When Tenjin contacted you about the spelling of our names, you said, "So should we use our usernames on Macross World?" Like, right? So it could be Gwen.
Thanks to Totoro.
It's like Gwen Totoro Campbell. That would have been Renato. And I was like, "Do you think I can get away with Adrian Save Robotech Lozano?" And then we're like, "No, let's just go with the regular names."
Well, let's get back on topic about the actual game itself.
Oh yeah, that thing.
That thing.
Oh yeah, you guys put a lot of hours in because we actually got our copies a day before the release.
No.
Yeah, we did. Because yeah, we got it one day before.
Oh right, I remember now. No. The delivery guy came to my house, but I wasn't in. So I got it like 1 or 2 days after.
He was working, I was here, so I opened his copy.
Well, it sent me pictures of my own copy.
Yeah. And mine got delivered to my old address, so it's actually floating around somewhere. I never got my copy. I ended up getting a copy from Tenjin, but the actual one Bandai Namco sent me is either been returned to Namco or
floating around.
Or floating around Takumin place somewhere.
It wouldn't be cool if it had a winning ticket code.
Now it's,
well, you don't know. Yeah.
Well, no.
Yeah, not that you know, but.
But I've only put in about
30 minutes.
45 minutes into the game because.
You mean from the beginning?
Yeah, I mean, I went through the training and everything, and I haven't had time to go back. Plus, but I've probably watched a good 3 hours of him playing it. So, what's the point of going on?
Okay. No. So, what do you think of that 45 minutes? That's basically the opening in the tutorials, right?
Oh, yeah. The opening tutorial. I am not a gamer. I don't have a PSP. I don't got a Vita. I only have a PS3 for a Blu-ray player. I barely played Halo 4 for the first time.
Getting better at now, though.
Yeah, I'm getting better, but I'm not a gamer. Best game ever was Jumping Flash. Like, that's how long ago I was playing games. Love that game. So, yeah, I'm not really diving into the game, regardless of what's in it or if it's, role-playing game or whatever the hell it is. To me, it's just like kind of cool. Great. Mm-hmm. I got the product. Whatever.
All right. Well,
so, supporting the
But franchise. It looks cool. I mean, It looks great, and there's some interesting things, but I've got other things to do.
Well, I'm going to start off with game mechanics, Renato, and then do story. So those two main categories. And there will be, for what it's worth, spoilers for the first, whatever I've played, half of the game.
Oh, no.
But since these are things that everyone else appears to be skipping in order to finish the game quicker because they don't understand what's going on, then, I don't think they're really spoilers. And you guys are loving these jelly beans. I shouldn't have brought them down.
Yeah.
They're good, aren't they? Right?
When they were on the table, I wasn't interested. But now they're on the floor. For some reason, they're more attractive.
Does that say something about my inner animal?
It says something about some girls I met. But anyway, anyways, moving on. So, gameplay mechanics. All right. Now, first of all, the DNA of this game is blatantly obvious in your face. It is the DNA of the PSP games. But from the outset, you've got three different control options. And what interested me was that they described control option, because control option A is PSP.
Yeah.
B, they control as third-person shooter. Whereas, you spend so much time as, a Gerwalk or a fighter. It just seems a weird description. And then the type C is custom controls just for the game. And that's what I'm using. What were you using, Renato?
A, because
I've used played the PSP, so much of the PSP. Okay. I find C works pretty well.
I might try that later.
It will take some getting used to, I'm sure. But.
Yeah.
But so right off the bat, the introductory training missions are absolutely boring as all heck.
And the reason is, you can't transform.
Yeah. So you're locked into battery. Mind you, they make a story excuse for you having to
Wait, before that, though, you're in the YF-29.
Okay.
Because, the story begins outside in space.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get shot down.
It's a mission so you can't win.
Yeah.
And not having touched the PSP games for ages.
I was doing pretty well.
I wasn't doing... Like, the ghosts were easy, but then it was Rod, and I was like, oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
So, the tutorial missions are done in such a way that, you know, the Valk is being fixed. It's a VF-0, but it's a replica VF-0. And as Aisha gradually repairs it, you get your transformational abilities back, which is why after you complete... You know, you get one mission as Batroid, one as Gerwalk. By the time you get to Fighter, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And it was that first mission with Fighter. She's like, okay, you can fly now. Take me around on a quick tour of the area.
Yeah.
Now, it's the first time you're not in a restricted training area.
Yeah.
And they let you off the leash, so to speak. Well, you're not supposed to really shoot anything. Mm-hmm. Although I think I blew up a lot of stuff. And that's when it hits you. It's, wow, there's bandit ships everywhere. There's two huge motherships within range of your base, and suddenly your HUD lights up with about 30 missiles incoming. None of them reach you, because it registers those short-range missiles that the ships fire, which aren't going to come anywhere near you, but you've got this constant thing on your heads up of missiles incoming. And that's when the scope of the game just kind of hits you. And the fact that it really feels like something new. You have this now, while it's not an open world, this huge area to fly anywhere you want. And I know they said you'd have this, but it's not until you hit that first mission that it's, for me, it was like that moment in Grand Theft Auto where it was the first time you got to really run around the city and just do whatever you want, you know, to see what you could do.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's where the action RPG element comes into it, because it's an RPG in the sense that you're allowed to go to any location you want, revisit other locations, go here, go there,
right,
which is a break from the PSP, just mission-based.
Mm-hmm.
You got to kill these 20 guys, and then that's it, and then the next mission is kill these other 20 guys. So you have to go to base, restock your ammo, and get special items, and then you have to go out into caves and then fight these guys. So I think that it's a nice blend between story and just exploring and all the action from the PSP games.
I know that the fact that you have to buy ammunition was something a lot of people were a bit iffy about before the game came out.
Yeah.
But honestly, those missiles last you for ages. You got 10 boxes per weapon type. And there are, unless you're in the middle of a very specific mission, you can normally just drop by a town and buy more of it.
Yeah.
But the immediate thing, apart from this kind of open world nature, which was great, unfortunately, you're almost simultaneously hit with what I think is the game's greatest problem.
The low ceiling.
The low ceiling and how it restricts you. Because you can't get to the top of the SDFN-8, which is just sitting there.
But that's because this game is basically Orgus, under a different title. I guess it's okay for me. I don't really need that. I just pretend that I'm flying in the Orgus world where all these different parallel universes have come together and you have a very low ceiling that you're not allowed to escape.
Well, I find this more of an issue in how it hinders playstyle. Because
there's
no real point to aerial dogfights. Because if you start trying to do loops and stuff, you're always going to hit that ceiling.
Well, that's true.
And it automatically reorients you and messes things up. So, really, fighter
mode...
But
why would you want to do loops when you're in a variable fighter? You just transform and turn around.
You're in a jet plane. Why would you not want to do loops, Renato?
Because you just transform and turn around. The plane mode is for getting from point A to point B.
Which is exactly what it boils down to for this game. Yeah. You do not dogfight in this plane.
I guess it depends what you like about the Valkyrie.
Well, you know? I found I used the fighter mode for dogfighting a lot more in the PSP games.
Yeah,
I barely ever use Gerwalk. But in this game, Gerwalk 100%.
Yeah.
I get to where I'm going in fighter mode, maybe let off a few salvos, then Gerwalk for as high as altitude bombardment as I can.
Yeah.
You know, so it was just kind of annoying. I kept being like, well, and the thing is, that ceiling is lower than many items in the environment. So you see a particularly high floating island, oh, what's on top of that? And bang. Like, you can get almost to the top of it, and you hit this wall, and you get flipped around.
Yeah, I've had that happen a couple of times.
And it's really annoying, because, well, I wouldn't want there to be a huge red barrier across the sky, like when you hit the perimeter, you get that red, you know, you can't, no through road or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing, because there's no indicator, you constantly hit it while trying to get the things that you can see, and that makes it stand out more, I thought. But yeah, that was the biggest problem with the game for me. Having said that, you know, I find I fly low, and granted, flying low to the deck means you escape all the missiles and stuff that come your way.
You know what? I think that the ceiling is lower on this game than it was on the other PS3 games, now that I think about it.
Although they wouldn't have had as wide of a play area or anything like that.
Well, yeah, they don't, obviously.
Mm. Fair enough.
But that's interesting.
So, you know, the modeling on the planes looks great.
Yep.
They look smooth. They transform well. You don't have customizable paint schemes, although you do have a certain amount of preset paint schemes.
Which are quite nice. They're better than I thought, than I was expecting.
Rather.
Right. Well, some of them were kind of wacky.
I like the BF-0 that looked like the 1D.
Yeah.
That was nice, yeah.
But then you also have kind of like bright neon pink stuff as well sometimes.
Oh, okay.
And of course, I'm going to say something you guys are sick of hearing me say, but the VIF 1S with the double strike pack.
Mm. Wait a minute, that doesn't exist in Macross lore.
It does now. It does now. So yeah, I think the game plays well. It just, not being able to use fighter as much as I want to, I find. I'm getting sick of being in Gerwalk all the time, but... Anyway, so you have a mother base, a mothership, which you come back to. That's where you kick off your next story mission. And between those, as you said, Renato, you go to these towns, which are giant sheds.
Yeah, with no people would ever fit inside. Like maybe 10 people inside, and that's it.
And you do they call them towns. And you do and you can sign up for quests. And the quests, you know, I mean, I've had one or two cases where. The verticality of things has thrown me off. Like, there's one item I had to find which was halfway up a tree or on one of those tiny floating rocks in the area I had to look in.
Yeah.
But as a general rule, with maybe two, three exceptions I've had to date, the quest descriptions are pretty clear.
And they're not too difficult.
No, they're pretty repetitive, but... You know.
There is one which... Did you do the one that said that you have to find information... about a certain person who has appeared out of nowhere. And I think they're referring to Basara.
Okay.
And you ask around for information for Basara. And there's 5 of these bits of information. It's not even tangible things that you have to get. And I got 4 out of 5. And you have to get the 5 before mission whatever. And I already went past the mission, so I don't even know if I can complete
it. Right, right. I think I got half of them.
I got 4 out of 5. I don't know.
And the way collecting things for missions it is a bit messed up because I'd say there's a mission where you have to pick up these items that you get by destroying bandit ships. If you've become annoyed with bandit ships and gone through and blown them all up, you've already collected those items. And I know some people on the forums, for example, have just gone and sold all their items that they think are necessary. So they've sold off subquest items.
Mm-hmm.
The ships haven't respawned. And then they can't. Turning that quest, or they've put them in their inventory back at ship, and they don't know they've got them. The thing is, though, any item that's necessary for a subquest says clearly in the item description, subquest.
Yeah, but not clearly for anyone who doesn't speak Japanese.
I know, but it's people are claiming some of the subquests are unclear. It's like, well, it's not that unclear. It's just the language barrier.
Yeah.
You know, then you've got the story missions, which when you get far enough into the game, of course, you can go to the next main area of the world map. And honestly, which is a desert, first thing I did was I got there and it's like, now they give you the freedom to turn your ship around and go back to whichever major point on the world map you want to be at. And I was like, the hell with this desert crap. I got heaps of subquests back at the island. So I just turned around and went back. And once you do that, because going back to the ship is not triggering a story mission anymore, you have a lot more freedom because you can go back and change Valkyries whenever you want. You can go back and change your equipment whenever you want. I found that made the subquests a lot more fun. Well, let's talk performance and graphics then.
Right.
Slow down.
Sorry, I'm not down with the lingo.
Lots of missiles equals lots of frame drops.
Right.
But does that bother you?
Not really.
I kind of like it because you can see all these missiles in slow motion. It's like an Eternal Circus slow motion.
Yeah, but it... Okay, all right. Well, anyway. But it wasn't like that in the PS2 games, though. So it does throw you off for a while. Right. But I, like I said, I have been playing the PS3 games as well, and it was like that for Do You Remember Love? It was like that for Last Frontier. So I wasn't too surprised that there's slowdown everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any issue with that? Because you do get a little bit of a pause between, for example, when you get one of your wingmen to do a special attack.
Oh, do you? I guess maybe, yeah.
In
yeah.
the time you hit it and the time their face comes up on screen.
Right, yeah, yeah, there's a bit of lag there.
Which, yeah. Although this, the whole RPG mechanics, I've got to say, being able to, oh, I'm almost shot down, stop, pause, hit potion, which is what the repair kits are, they're potions.
Yeah, yeah.
And then suddenly you're miraculously healed and...
No, but sometimes you do get these bastards that just kill you with one shot, especially after the potion.
Especially earlier on. Because earlier on, you get hit by one of the beam cannons, and that stuff will take you down quick.
Yeah.
The other thing is, if one of the first abilities you get is the ability to auto guard, that the green barrier shield, pinpoint barrier shield.
I didn't get that.
Yeah, that's. But the thing is, it only works. It doesn't work 100% of the time, and it never works if you get hit while in fighter mode. You've got to be in Batroid or Gerwalk for it to be effective. And half the time, you get shot down by accident. At random, seemingly random, is when you're traveling between places and a beam cannon just comes out of nowhere and hits you in the
butt. With a beam, there's nothing you can do. But for missiles, you can just deploy a shaft.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Chaff. And I've got to say, by the way, the anti-missile system, I forgot what they called, that they came out with, was it the second PSP game that brought that in?
It was the second one,
anti-missile action. Love it. Because on a big screen, it's way more effective. Because on the PSP screen, I was always like, I'm shooting down missiles, but I can't really see what I'm doing. But the screen's big enough... In the HD, you can actually see, even from a distance, all these missiles coming at you, and you see all the little explosions blossoming. Mm. I thought that system was a lot more effective. I also recently did my first scroll action...
Race?
Race. No, no, not the race, the scrolling action, where you're flying into the screen at some points.
I thought that was a race.
No, that's a Vanquish race. And it was a bit glitchy, but a lot of fun, because you're just like, lock on, spam missiles, because you can't crash.
Okay.
Because it's controlling you through a canyon. But think of a trench run in Star Wars kind of thing. But graphically, I mean, it's no Battlefield 3. It's no Metal Gear Solid.
Well, it's pretty good for me. I'm kind of like Adrian. I'm not a gamer really.
Mm-hmm.
The only games that I do play are Macross games, and the only games that I used to play were back in the 90s with what we used to call next gen systems. But they're not anymore. Like,
you
the Super Famicom is not a next-gen system.
But
right?
You own a PSP. Why did you originally get that PSP?
For Macross.
Just for Macross.
Macross, and also to replay those Super Famicom games that I used to have.
And emulators. Yet you have a PS3.
I bought that because I wanted a Blu-ray player and also Tornet to have digital recordings of TV.
Okay, that explains it then.
The only other non-Macross game that I have is... what's it called? Another Centuries episode ass.
That thing.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Although it's got Orgus in it, so it's...
Which, yeah. So, yeah, graphically, I mean, you know, there's a lot of... If you get down to the SCFN8, which looks identical to the SCF1, yeah. It's like, it looks great from a distance or some altitude, but you land on Armored 1 on Armored 2.
It's pixelated.
And you can see the low resolution of Having said that, I don't know about you. That was the first thing I did.
That's what I did, yeah.
I mean, you get freedom. Whee! I'm landing on there. So, guys, I'm here. It's the first thing you do. Just land on that deck. Flew up to the bridge.
Yeah, but
stood on top of the bridge in Batroid mode. And then realized I couldn't get to the top of the cannon.
Oh.
Which, yeah.
That's because it's dangerous.
All right.
See, they're looking out for your safety.
And standing on the bridge.
Those energy bursts.
That's right.
You said you like the music.
Yeah, we've had more Macross 2 in this podcast than the main topics. You realize this? You'll be derailing this. So, yeah, I mean, graphically, I know how
this looks good.
I mean, by Japanese standards, it looks pretty darn good. And given how niche the title is,
yeah,
I'm impressed. It's obvious they, you know, backed development of it by the smaller projects on the hybrid packs.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting playing it to have seen the development, the changes they've made along the way.
Yeah.
But you know,
that's not to say that this game is. I mean, this game is different to the PSP games completely. This game is different because it's a completely different approach
right.
to making a Macross game. Just is using the same building blocks.
Right.
You know?
And I'm hoping that, you know, now they've got the engine, we'll get another game or two out of it, although it's only sold about 75,000 copies as
well. Well, this is the thing. I mean, if it was pretty easy to make sequels to the Macross games on the PSP because they could just add more missions and just mix it up.
Well, and because it's
bit.
Really cheap to make games on the PSP.
And especially when the big thing that they added for the last one was it's a Gakuen Modo, like the Academy mode, which is just like girl games.
No, great. Well, I mean, the reason I mentioned the graphics is just that I know, like yourself and like Adrian, there's a lot of people who seem to be getting the Macross game, who are old school Macross fans, but either A, aren't necessarily gamers, or B, not necessarily into Japanese games. So I know a lot of people who are used to like the latest Bioshock or whatever, and they're expecting that quality and fidelity.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, wow, this looks terrible. And like, no, for a niche Japanese game that sells under 100,000 copies, this is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Gundam has yet to have a game that looks as good on the PS3,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of shocking. Yeah. So,
but no, going back to the idea of sequels, the possibility of sequels.
Right.
Because the story itself
right.
and the voice acting is the main push behind this game. It probably won't have a sequel.
Well, or it would be completely different. Well, I say sequel, I mean utilizing
maybe
the engine.
Update, maybe.
I'm talking more using that. Now they've got the building blocks for this platform to use them to do another.
Yeah, no, but what I'm saying is that the building blocks were already there.
But they weren't in high def. They didn't have the arenas, the areas.
Well, yeah, the PS3.
But now they've got all on the PS3. They, you know, they could possibly do another thing with original characters. This it was necessary this time to have all the known characters because it's a 30th anniversary, B, it's the Hook. But they could do the further adventures of Leon or another story or whatever.
I'm not sure I'd be interested in further adventures of Leon.
Yeah, let's talk
maybe
about
I'll be interested in a Macross 7 hybrid pack. Or not hybrid pack, but like equivalent to the hybrid pack games that they did for the other Blu-ray releases.
Well, I know Nobutoshi's not doing a particularly good bustler in this game, let alone one in the future.
That's true.
But let's talk Leon. Let's talk Leon, because I like Leon. What's your problem with Leon, Renato?
Nothing. He's just kind of there. I guess he's okay. Okay. I mean, what's his personality?
Well, this is the thing I like about him. A, he's an established SMS pilot. He knows his job. He crashes, gets shot down, crashes on this pilot. They're like, well, because of the fog phenomenon, you're not getting off this planet. He's like, would you like to work for the SMS branch here, since you can't get off? He's like, fine, you guys are going to pay me, right?
Wait, so he's no, because you're not getting off this planet probably for a year, is
no,
what she
up
says.
To a year.
Yeah, but several months.
But either way, first thing he asks about is he's pragmatic. He's not a wimp. He's not running away. He's not some teenager who hasn't flown a plane before. He seems to be almost one of the more mature
that's true.
Macross characters after maybe what, Shin
but
and
again,
Isamu.
Almost to a fault. Like,
yeah,
if you
almost
told him you're not getting off this planet for months, possibly up to a year. Like, I have things to do! What are you doing? You know, I'd be more confrontational than that. I'd take the nearest Valkyrie and fly the hell out of that base.
Go where?
To the SDF.
Apart from the fact that there's no Valkyries when he's there, so he can't do that.
Which makes no sense, because when you find more characters, Aisha just says, hey, look! In the wardrobe, I found a VF-11. Here, would you like it? I like to fly a Valkyrie.
I like Leon, but let's quickly talk Aisha and Mina before going on to story.
Mm.
Any thoughts on either of those two?
They're okay, I guess.
I got to admit, I thought initially when I read the character profiles that Aisha would be the more interesting character. But if anything, she's, so far at least, really not fleshed out at all. She's just this genius.
But again, I don't think that Leon is fleshed out either.
He's fleshed out. He's got more of a backstory so far, at least, than Aisha does.
Where does it come from?
But, like, you've got the tragedy in his past, you've got the job he had.
Oh, I hadn't gotten to the past part.
But Aisha's just like, I'm super smart, I can build any Valkyrie in the world. Oh, and I'm the head of SMS Ouroboros. Like, okay.
Yeah, why? Yeah.
Yeah, none of that's really, well, so far, at least, for me, explained. Mina, on the other hand, being the debut role of
Haruka
Chisuga. Thank you. That's a good way to remember the name of Chisuga Haruka.
She sounds good. I like her acting in this.
You know,
it's probably because, like we were talking about before, she's still amateurish.
Right.
So she sounds more natural.
Right. It does stand out. It's interesting because when you look at reviews of the game, reviews on Amazon Japan compared to some of the reviews I've seen on English sites, Amazon Japan, people were rating it, you know, say 4 out of 5 stars. And most of the criticisms came from either stuff about the story or the voice acting, particularly Haruka, because I was saying that she sounds out of place because she's surrounded by like at least 18 veteran voice actors.
Yeah.
Whereas on the English side, people are complaining about everything except the plot because they don't get it. Can't be helped. And people are criticizing gameplay mechanics and all this and giving it much lower scores. So that really harsh divide really came, I found interesting. But as you said, having a complete newcomer to voice acting is very Macross in...
Right. I mean, Nemime and Ranka.
Right.
Now, you know.
So she fits the mold and she does stand, her voice acting does stand out as being noobish, but like some of her delivery, but having said that, she's good.
To me, it doesn't sound noobish. It sounds amateurish.
It sounds natural.
It sounds natural. That's what I wanted
but
to get.
Like,
because so she gets to be a really skilled voice actress, you're going to complain, right?
Exactly, because that's what happened with Megumi Nakajima.
Yeah.
That's exactly, and it's even more prominent in the movie version of, what is it, The False Songstress, the first one, the first movie?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're re-recording dialogue from the first few episodes. So there's a marked difference between the styles of acting. And I prefer the original recordings of that.
When you say natural, to me, to my ears, that sounds, it naturally sounds more like she's reading off a script.
She doesn't sound like talking. She's talking.
There's a couple of times I've felt like she's been reading off a script.
Yeah.
But either way, I find she's a good character. But let's talk briefly then about story. For what we can talk about story at this point, because I haven't finished it, and you're 10 hours in. But
yeah. What I'd like to say about, of course, I haven't really played the game, although I watched Gwyn play it earlier today. Is that it's written? The story is written by Ukyo Kodachi, who wrote the Frontier novels and also wrote the Macross the Ride novels. As many in-jokes and homages were in the Macross Frontier TV series, there are many, many more in the novels.
Right.
My favorite being a description of a cafe, which is just the first few lines of Silver Moon, Red Moon being used to describe the cafe.
Right.
This guy probably knows more Macross than almost anyone else right now.
And he fits in, initially at least, a fair few gags, references into Macross 30.
He's probably the best person they could have gotten to write it. And there is a novelization coming out.
There is. Well, you know,
he's writing, right?
There's one part fairly early on in the game where Aisha threatens Leon, if you don't stop complaining, you're being fed nothing but pineapple salad for the next few meals. And he's like, no, hell no. So there's a lot of in-jokes. And I've got to be honest, after Frontier, I feel Macross 30 in terms of in-jokes is as far as I want to go. It's getting to the point where there's not enough new material. Like, they're regurgitating stuff. I want new stuff to go into that lexicon of jokes. But story-wise, so as was known before the game came out, you know, Leon is being sent with the 25 to deliver the AI and programming for the 25 to the SMS branch on Ouroboros. Their supply chain is fairly all over the map because they have this fold phenomenon, which, as Aisha says at one point, can be a couple of weeks, can be up to a year. And once it kicks in, nothing...
Fold Aurora.
Nothing less than a Macross class ship can get through the atmosphere.
Is that a hint?
Who knows?
Maybe.
So anyone on there, and it just so happens that there's a part of the year where most of the people at her branch have taken the end of year holidays or whatever, and then the Aurora hits and there's almost no one there. So luckily for her, Leon is mysteriously shot down by Rod, which is shown in the scene. Rod being an old childhood friend who is now an enemy, which doesn't sound like Macross the music culture at all. And basically Leon's like, well, all right, well, if I'm stuck in this planet for God knows how long.
Did that guy, Ukyo something, write?
No, he didn't write the music culture.
Okay.
So if I'm stuck on this planet, I might as well, you know, work. And Aisha's got work for him to do. So mm-hmm. she puts him to work. Now, Aisha is this miracle prodigy who can build any Valk you want, provided you give her the parts. And she's in charge of SMS and Ouroboros. She's also somewhat of a, what would we say, an archaeologist, I suppose. She's interested in these ruins.
Yeah, which, astro-archaeologist or whatever. Like she's into protoculture,
right.
Prehistory.
Which dot the whole planet. They're all over the planet. And she wants help in investigating them. And one of the times when you investigate them, Leon comes across a girl in suspended animation who is, of course,
Mina. Well, the whole story is suspended animation, right. If you actually watch the clip.
Right, which is Mina, and he brings her back out. And before this happens even, there's a lot of abnormalities going on in the planet. The aurora shouldn't be happening at this time. It seems it's going to go longer than normal. There's things like Vajra appearing on the planet. There's all these stories of Zentradi going rogue, of going berserk, and of actual humans, like SMS folks, just going rogue as well. And no one knows what's going on. And these instances increase once Mina's let out. And so what they come to find is that Mina is, for what it's worth, spoiler, part of the previous civilization of Ouroboros. She's not part of the protoculture.
Mm.
The ruins, however, are, and her civilization was very interested in using them. And it's thought that if you... this is something I've only just gotten up to, but if all five or six, however many years, ruins are activated, like you can pretty much control, manipulate time and space.
Mm-hmm.
And as it is, these ruins are thought to control the aurora that happens to the planet. So the idea is if they activate all the ruins, the problems on the planet will subside, the aurora will subside, they can get off.
But they need kind of song energy to power those.
Exactly.
Ruins.
They need song energy to power the ruins. And each one can, you know, you can only use a certain song once, certain songstress once with each ruin.
Collect them all.
Exactly. And so the ruins and the planet itself, because, you know, folds super, surpass time and space, are calling in all the best singers from history to help power.
All the best singers from history.
From Macross history. To
okay,
help power.
Right. That's different.
To help power these ruins.
Not
yeah.
like Bob Dylan is there. Or like
good choice.
Billy
good
Holiday.
Choice.
Or...
I wouldn't have picked him as the best singer, but yeah, that's another story. But yeah, so they can
buy that game.
So this is the pretense behind them Little doing Tarzan. This Macross festival, the celebration of getting everyone together. And it works. As a setup, it works fine. And then there's all these smaller quests, like there's at one point a disease which was originally something cured by the previous civilization of Ouroboros, which Cheryl collapses from.
Oh,
so,
God, what?
Because she's going to collapse. She's Cheryl. So Mina has to...
Doesn't she get vaccinations? Didn't she learn from a previous experience?
Well, either way, Mina has to look up what items they need to cure Cheryl by linking with the computers from her past, and she finds out what's happened to her and things like that. So during this period, you know, the first people we encounter are Alto and Cheryl, who are protecting the damn Vajra.
Yeah.
And it's, the Vajra are not hostile, at first at least, because they're not being controlled.
Yeah.
So Alto and Cheryl don't know how they got there, and they just know that they're with the non-controlled Vajra. They don't want people attacking them, and so they're kind of defending them, and they end up joining you. They're the first people who join you. Later on, you'll get Milen. You come across Basara, but after that, you fly a bit with Isamu very briefly before you lose him. And then you get Sarah in your party. And Sarah is a lot more calm than I would have thought she would have been.
Trusting.
Calm. It's like, I've never been off the island before.
Yeah.
And now I'm in outer space on another planet. It's like, you're really calm, considering that one generator freaked you the hell out. But every character that, you know, when Milan pops up, she's with Kamijin.
Now that's just going to talk about it. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Go for it. You've gotten up to that part, right?
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so it's really great because Kamijin is fighting against some brainwashed centrality or something, right? If I remember correctly. Kamijin is using Milan to kind of break their brainwashing thing, as they were doing in the Macross 7, right? So when Kamijin comes up, you see him together with Milan, and Kamijin is saying to Milan, go, son of Miria, or daughter of Miria, and break their spells so that we can stop this senseless fighting or something really crazy like that. And then, like, Aisha and, what's his name, Leon, were looking at him, and they're like, doesn't he look familiar? I think, isn't that Kamijin? And they're like, well, who cares? We're fighting on the same side, so let's attack those rogues in Trali. And so everyone's on the same side, attacking these rogues in Trali.
What were the rogues in Trali trying to do?
I don't remember.
They're trying to steal reaction weaponry.
Okay. Why is that?
Well, they're being controlled by the ruins. They're like, among these groups being driven weird by the ruins. But, well, the thing is, there was reaction. Is it reaction or reactionary? Reaction weaponry.
Reaction.
Reaction weaponry involved. And Kamijin was only paired with Milan because, you know, A, he wants to recruit the Zentradi.
Yeah,
he gets back to normal to him. But more than that, he wants the reaction weaponry.
Yeah, but you find that out afterwards, right?
Right.
So, once the rogues and Trali are defeated, everyone's like, okay, thanks, whoever you are. Anyway, I'm Kamijin, and now I'm going to take my shit. Thank you very much.
It's like, yoink.
Yeah.
My nukes.
And then Aisha and Leon are like, wait, I remember who this guy is. Yeah, we studied him in history class or something like that. This is Mikasa Goroshi no Kamijin. He's the ally killer.
The backstabber.
The backstabber. And Milan is like, wait, who, huh, what?
He's just like, why did you partner with him?
And,
it's like,
and now they have to rescue Milan or something.
He said he knew my parents.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that interplay.
Yeah.
Between everything. And, you know, the first person Sarah meets because he saves her on the planet is his summer.
Okay.
Which is just bizarre. So I don't think, I think anyone looking for, granted, I haven't finished the game, any kind of real. Anything that really adds, I mean, it has an official spot in the timeline, but anyone looking for something meaningful and lasting and new to canon is going to come away disappointed.
It's more just a collection of in-jokes, really.
You're right. Those who can enjoy it is a celebration of Macross with the kind of cool gameplay. I think
so
that's the appreciation of it.
You haven't gone up to Minmay yet?
Heck no.
Okay.
I'm really taking my time. When I get a new Valk I really like, I'll just set the camera to look at me from head on or from the side, and I'll fly from one end of the map to the other, just seeing how it looks above the water and how it looks twirling. And yeah, I'm in no rush to finish it. But it's fun. I mean, you can really waste hours just like going through those quest guilds, not even mean to. I just blow some stuff up for an hour, and before you know it, you've wasted an hour or two just, you know, doing all those. So anyways, I think that's about enough from the game for now. And maybe we can come back with some more fully developed impressions once we've hopefully both finished the game. Anyways, on that note, thank you again, Egan. Howard, thank you for coming.
And thank you for inviting me.
Adrian?
Buy the game. And support Arcadia products whatever comes out. And, you know, whatever. See you guys later. What?
Not if it's that horrible pattern of 3 years anniversary.
Anyways, Egan, thank you for your time.
Glad to be here.
Richard?
Yeah, thank you.
And Renato?
Bomba!
And with that, we're folding out, and we'll deculture you again next time on Macro Speaker Podcast.
Arigatou, guys.